ESPN Daily is presented by Supercuts, the smarter, easier way to get a haircut. It's not just any haircut. It's Supercuts.
Snap back to Garoppolo. Pocket crumbling. He spins out. He's hit. He's wrapped up. He flips it forward. It's tipped. It's intercepted. It's intercepted. It's intercepted. And Traven Howard clinches the NFC Championship game.
That is how we learned that the Los Angeles Rams will be hosting the Cincinnati Bengals in Super Bowl 56. Yet another home game for a team that went all in on this very possibility. And all it took was that tragicomic game-ending interception, Joe Burrow outdueling the overwhelmingly favored Chiefs and Patrick Mahomes in overtime, and also about a dozen other things that demand explanation. So today, our Monday morning quarterback, Alex Smith, guides us through a conference championship weekend that made us forget that Tom Brady had allegedly retired. Well, almost. I'm Pablo Torre. It's Monday, January 31st. This is ESPN Daily.
Delicious meat, nutritious. In the snack that packs a real protein punch, Wonderful Pistachios, one of the highest protein nuts out there. Each 1 ounce serving has 6 grams of protein, giving you over 10% of your daily value. Trust me, I've been eating them like there's no tomorrow all week. Wonderful Pistachios also come in a variety of flavors and sizes, perfect for enjoying with your family and friends or taking them with you on the go. And you, like me, are on the go a lot, taking the kids to school, hopping from meeting to meeting, shopping for groceries, whatever it may be. Well, the good news is, not only are Wonderful Pistachios a complete protein providing all 9 essential amino acids, they're also great for all your adventures. So whether you're a pistachio purist who loves cracking open every nut, or you prefer the convenience of no-shells pistachios, Wonderful Pistachios has got you covered. Grab Wonderful Pistachios and elevate your snack game today. Visit WonderfulPistachios.com to learn more.
So, Alex, this is the start of a weekend where, oh, Tom Brady is allegedly retiring. And, oh, wait, there's Patrick Mahomes getting eliminated from the postseason. And we're not going to start with either of those stories. Not yet. Because what we just saw in this Rams-Niners game, which was, of course, like a edge-of-your-seat thriller, as every playoff game has been for the last 2 weeks. The Rams win this 20-17, but I want to go to the moment with less than 2 minutes left, because Jimmy Garoppolo, San Francisco quarterback, has the ball. And what happened on that last play exactly for the 49ers as you saw it?
Yeah, I mean, we often talk about as quarterbacks and on offense, when you're in a two-minute situation like that, that it's really important to get off to a good start. Like any completion's a good completion. Like get the ball rolling. Get back up at the line of scrimmage. There's like just momentum in that, you know, that when you're playing in that kind of situation, you know, they went first down, the ball got batted. Second down, they throw a negative 2 yard completion with the clock running, you know, and then they end up having to hurry. So here we are, 3rd and 12, not exactly what you expect, you know, when you're starting a 2 minute situation. Cause really it wasn't, I mean, it's kind of what you're asking for. They had plenty of time. They had a timeout. Like this wasn't unachievable circumstances that they weren't in. This wasn't 13 seconds need a field goal to tie. You know, this there plenty right. of time, and but all of a sudden here they are 3rd and 12, and they're rushing up to the line of scrimmage, and it's not the call you want to have to make when you're the coach or play caller either. And you know, the two guys, this defensive front for the Rams, Von Miller and Aaron Donald, just causing havoc, both of them. And Von Miller all night on the right side against
all
the right
night.
Tackle was kind of having his way. And we hadn't really talked about Aaron Donald a ton in this game thus far. You know, we hadn't heard his name called, I should say. And, you know, here in the biggest moment, when you had to make a play, they both did. They both came up huge for their team. And in desperation, Jimmy's, you know, trying to break tackles and run around, and he ends up flinging a ball that ends up getting deflected and picked. And it you know, seals the game. Again, I thought we were in. This had been a heck of a game up until this point. I thought, you know, here we go again. Every game thus far, I feel like we'd watched, you know, it'd been fireworks in the final couple minutes. And this one, you know, really, really didn't even get going.
Yeah, I mean, Alex, you used the word we there. We as in the collective human population watching this game, but also we as in former 49er. We've talked about this all year with you, of course. Like, this was a team that you know well.
Yep.
And you had been rooting for, full journalistic disclosure here. And I want to take you inside just the mind of Jimmy G here at the end, because it might be the end for him in San Francisco. I mean, look, simultaneously, this is the first time the Rams had beaten the Niners with Jimmy G a quarterback in seven games. They'd won six in a row. Jimmy G, before this game, had been at the center of almost disturbingly heated national debates about how good is he, how important is he, of that. You are wise, as always, to stay off of Twitter. But clearly, like Trey Lance, who they traded for to pick at number three overall in last year's draft, this does seem more than ever like his team right around the corner starting next season. I mean, and you were in a position like this. You, in Kansas City, were the incumbent. They had Patrick Mahomes, who we'll talk about in a bit. What's the mentality like at this point in the road, do you think, for Jimmy Garoppolo?
I mean, he's dealing with a lot right now. You said it. Obviously, I played 8 years, started off my career with the Niners, and you know there's been an affinity. This is I'm back, made my home back here in the Bay Area.
Yes.
And then I think even just the circumstance you said, like I feel like I was a former top pick that played really early on in my career, and then all of a sudden I was the guy that you know, I was the elder statesman in the room, and with these young picks behind me, I did it twice, and having to play through that, and so feel like I've sat in all these chairs. Again, I mean, I really do, I think, have to commend the entire organization, everybody involved in this case, for how well it went this year. I think with everybody trying to pull this team apart at the quarterback room.
That was remarkable, Alex, that yes, Jimmy Garoppolo, for all of the criticisms that are fair, never once criticized or said anything to create pressure against Trey Lance.
Yep. And we've seen QBs, his peers, crumble under far less pressure to the media this year. And so, yeah, it was amazing to watch. And the fact is that obviously once they moved up and drafted Trey Lance, like the clock was ticking on Jimmy. And, you know, I think he nearly pulled it off. He nearly bought himself potentially another year. Tough pill to swallow. I thought he battled, you know, all year. This team battled. They weren't even, you know, at one point to say that they were going to be in the NFC Championship game, you know, at the midway point would have been kind of ludicrous. But to put yourself in Jimmy's shoes right now.
Yeah. What's he thinking? What's he feeling, Alex? Yeah.
You know, to be honest, you go from 100% of your focus on the task at hand, right? You're completely blocking out the noise as much as possible. You're focusing in on what you have to do, right? And they got on a roll. They won two playoff games. There's basically three. They had to win week 18 to get in. And all of a sudden, here they are in the NFC Championship game. And you don't want to look up. You don't want to get distracted, right? You don't want to let anything creep in. So you're completely right here. Here are the Rams, an opponent they know well. I think this has become the best rivalry in football. As a side note, I mean, this was one of the most physical games I think I've watched in a long, long time.
Yeah, absolutely.
And you go from completely locked in and you're, you know, like you said, 2 minutes left. You got a chance to go win this game and you know, keep the thing going. And in the blink of an eye, it flips on you, right? And all of a sudden you're sitting on that bench watching the seconds tick off the clock. You know, confetti's falling on somebody else's shoulders. And yeah, I think this all, the reality of what we've all been talking about comes crashing in, right? And literally probably a lot of, you know, some potential goodbyes going on. A lot of goodbyes in that locker room. Certainly for a lot of guys, that team will not be the same. You know, and it's a ton of unknown. So it sucks. You know, like it does. Honestly, it sucks. And you put so much in and sacrifice so much with each other. And those are real relationships that will last a lifetime. And boom, they're gone, you know, just like that.
No, and suddenly you're imprisoned in a hall of memes, Alex, just because of the way that last throw looked, like fluttering, being flung, being picked, giving fuel to everyone who'd ever criticized the guy. I mean, in fairness to him here, Alex, you had mentioned, like, you know, how this game could have gone differently. And there were a number of turning points that, if not for, well, what Jaquaski Tartt did, might have been that much more palatable for the Bay Area, right? Like, there are a couple of decisions we could spotlight here. There's, why'd you not go for it on fourth and two instead of punting it away? But the tart non-pick that should have been a pick.
Stafford back, gets hit as he throws deep downfield for Van Jefferson, and the ball should have been intercepted. It was dropped. Jaquaski Tart had the interception on the 49er 32-yard line, and he dropped the ball.
How would you describe that particular sequence, Alex?
Yeah, you know, game-changing. The 49ers won the first, you know, three quarters of this game, right? They won. They had played amazing. They did what they had to do. They got key turnovers. They were opportunistic on offense and made, you know, made some clutch plays. Jimmy made some clutch throws that, you know, the touchdown pass to Kittle. Debo does what Debo does and, you know, takes a screen to the house.
Like, they, crazy.
They
run,
were doing the things that they had to do to pull off this upset for three quarters, even into the fourth quarter. And when it mattered most in the, you know, the final 8 minutes of this game, they didn't get it done. The Jaquaski Tart interception, this, I mean, right in his hands, you know, next play leads to a 30-yard completion to OBJ, tacked on with a 15-yard personal foul. And all of a sudden they're kicking the game tying field goal at that point. So, and then I think the big one, and this kind of speaks to Jimmy and this offense. And this is what I think they're, you know, a little bit is going to be the talk is, you know, they had two possessions here to win this game in the fourth quarter.
Yes.
And couldn't get it done. Didn't get the drives in the fourth quarter where they needed to make something happen, and couldn't really muster anything. And that's what cost them, you know. End of game, 2 minute is a huge situation. And the Rams made the plays down the stretch, you know, I think on the flip side of that coin, you got to talk about Stafford and Kupp because they're the ones.
Let's talk about that, man. No, situationally, Alex, when there was a third down, Matthew Stafford turned to the guy he's been turning to all year, right? Cooper Kupp is an MVP candidate. You know that by now. But in this game, the way he finishes with 11 catches for 142 yards, both Rams touchdowns.
Stafford throws right to the end zone. Cooper Kupp, touchdown LA!
I mean, clearly there's a connection and also a security blanket dynamic there. What's it like to have that guy to turn to as you saw it unfold in this game tonight?
Yeah, and six of those catches were third down conversions. I mean, all night he was doing it. And in the biggest moments, time and time again, Matthew Stafford turned to his guy. We've been talking about the relationship all year. And in obviously on the biggest stage for them this year, they you know, continued at it. You just couldn't stop him. And you know, I thought the play of the game there on that final drive in the ticking moments. I think it was a third and three at their own 32 or 37 or something, and it was a tight window throw. Stafford hits him on the little in cut, and he takes it all the way down to the 12, and it basically, you know, solidified points for them, you know, with the game tied, and obviously gave them the lead that ended up being the go ahead win. And I do think, again, with that, we also got to give a shout out to Odell Beckham Jr. Because I think if he wasn't doing what he was doing on the other side of the field, that Cooper Kupp wouldn't have done what he did.
113 yards on 9 catches for a guy who had been discarded basically by the Cleveland Browns earlier this season.
Yes. And I mean, was uncovering all night. And this was, you know, the Rams and Odell took a lot of heat midseason, you know, obviously trying to get out of Cleveland. The Rams, you know, obviously aggressive and sign him. And was this going to work? The Rams were rolling at that point. Was it going to pay off? And they kind of took their lumps for a few weeks. It didn't look very good, you know, but they obviously stayed at it. And he has been such a big contributor down the stretch here. And then, I mean, he just made it look easy tonight.
Yeah, having Cooper Kupp on one side, Odell Beckham Jr. on the other is a terrifying thing. Having Matthew Stafford as the keystone to this entire all-in project, obviously the guy finishes 337 yards, 2 touchdowns. You know, like, Alex, what did Stafford look like to you? Because there were moments like the tart would-be pick where, and the actual pick that he did throw, where it looked like, okay, there's a roller coaster dynamic to him.
10th play of the drive comes at 3rd and goal from the 3. Play clock at 1 as Stafford takes it. Looking left, comes off that read, fires middle, tipped up in the air and intercepted. Intercepted in the end zone by Jimmy Ward.
But what's your sense of how he's looking to you heading into the Super Bowl now, which will be playing, incidentally, at home?
Yeah, this is why this is why they brought him here for this game. They had 395 yards of offense. Matthew Stafford had nearly 340 of them. You know, they couldn't run the ball tonight. When you face good defensive fronts like the 49ers, who are one of the best in football, and they were determined to not let you run the football, you know, you had to find another way to win. And it was through drop back pass all night that he was able to do this. Yeah, I mean, you're not going to be perfect when you throw it 45 times. But again, we talked about it. He made the plays when they mattered most. And it was the difference. It really was. You know, they were down 10, and to battle back in the fourth quarter and pull this out, you know, obviously started with Matthew. And here's a guy that was 0-3 in his career postseason in Detroit, I think through 13 years of football, and comes to LA, and he's 3-0 in the postseason now, and got his team hosting the Super Bowl. So good for him. You know, I think he was a Hall of Famer before this season and before this postseason run. And I think this only solidifies that.
So if it all starts here with Matthew Stafford, it all ended, as we discussed, with Aaron Donald chasing down Jimmy Garoppolo. And look, the Rams defensive line, Alex, we've talked about your backfield encounters with them extensively on this program, by doubt. But when you watch them tonight, and again, they are the engine underneath all of this in their own way. What was running through your mind just watching Von Miller, Aaron Donald, the rest of those guys go to work?
Yeah, I mean, I was glad I was sitting on my couch watching it. You know, that's for sure. Those guys are relentless. You know, like I just have this picture in my mind. I was lucky enough to get to play with Trent Williams.
Yes, a mountain of a man.
And probably the best left tackle in football, and obviously playing through an ankle tonight. But, you know, there was times when Leonard Floyd and him were going toe-to-toe, and he's pushing him in the pocket and knocking him down at Jimmy's feet. And to just think about the firepower that they have up front, those three guys, I don't know if anybody else can boast that. You know, the likes of, obviously, Aaron Donald in the middle, maybe probably the best interior lineman there's been, certainly presently, and then to have two edge guys like that to go along with it. Just relentless. And again, to go back to Jimmy, like he'd played really, really well up until that point. And obviously, I think that kind of pressure just it's relentless, and it ended up getting him. I think it's nearly impossible to stop Aaron Donald for four quarters. And obviously, he made the game-winning play.
Yeah. All right, Alex, after the break, we'd once thought that it was almost nearly impossible to stop Patrick Mahomes. Turns out that the Cincinnati Bengals figured out a way.
Now let's talk about the play of the week. The pressure to follow up Hypnotic and Cognac weighing heavy on the team. Hypnotic was in the cup, blue, and ready for the play. And boom, Añejo Tequila came in with a smooth assist to Hypnotic's tropical fruit finish. Shaken, strained, poured, it was green and good. The playmaking splash shifted the tempo, another great cocktail from the Hypnotic team. Every season is Hypnotic and Tequila season. Hypnotic Liqueur, Bardstown, Kentucky, 17% alcohol by volume. Hypnotic reminds you to think wisely, drink wisely.
So last week, Alex, obviously, we watched the game of our lives, the Chiefs and the Bills. The encore was unforgettable in a different way. This AFC title game, it was stunning because the Chiefs started this game looking like they were just going to blow out Cincinnati, right? I mean, they scored a touchdown on each of their first three drives. They built a 21-3 lead to start this thing off. And then Joe Burrow and his Bengals pull off, I believe, the second biggest comeback win on the road in playoff history. So just to even situate ourselves at the coin toss there, because this is an overtime game again, what are you thinking as the Chiefs win the toss and overtime kicks off?
It was very different, honestly, than a week ago.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the Chiefs won the coin toss, and it was like, man, no one can stop either one of these offenses. Both those defenses were gassed, and it was going to be whoever got the ball first won. But I'm not going to lie, when the Chiefs won, and I know Arrowhead went berserk with the winning of the coin toss. But the game just felt different at that point. I'm not going to lie. I mean, the way the Chiefs ended, obviously played the entire second half, but the way they ended regulation.
Yes.
It really kind of caught me off guard. The stalling out down there in the red zone, both sacks by Patrick.
On second and goal and then on third and goal, yes.
Yeah, they were very uncharacteristic for me. I mean, obviously, both those situations, I think the Bengals rushed three, dropped eight, and Patrick had, loads of time back there in both those situations. And not only could he not find somebody, but obviously taking crucial sacks.
Mahomes catches the shotgun snap, retreats back to the 18. Now here comes the rush. Mahomes way back at the 25,
baby.
Loses the ball. The Chiefs fall on it at the 26.
Really uncharacteristic for the offense and Patrick. And so when they won the coin toss, for me, it wasn't necessarily like a lock. Like they'd kicked a field goal in two quarters of football. Other than that, they hadn't done anything. Sure enough, the overtime, went the same way the second half went. I mean, it was a quick three plays, obviously culminating in an interception down the field. We talked a lot about coin tosses this entire week. I know it got a ton of attention and the overtime
the
rules.
The coin toss and, winner had been 10-1 under this regime of playoff rules. Yes. Yeah.
And, not the case today. And I do think momentum, is a real thing. And then the Chiefs didn't have it at that point, and it showed. It showed, those three plays in overtime, I can't remember the time last time I saw three consecutive plays like that out of this offense. All three could have been intercepted. They just really looked out of sorts, which was mind-boggling, Pablo, mind-boggling while having watched the first half. I mean, they were unstoppable.
We got to talk about that, Alex, because look, Mahomes, for those, if you just woke up and listened to this podcast for the first time, Alex Smith, obviously ahead of Patrick Mahomes in Kansas City on the depth chart, has seen him, watched him as closely as anybody. What happened at the end of that first half, Alex? Because to reset that for our listenership here, right? Like, there was a very strange call that resulted in no points. And I'm just wondering if you could explain what you saw there.
Yeah, I mean, I think just to kind of set the stage, I mean, the Chiefs had gone three straight touchdowns, drives of 84 yards, 75 yards, and 72 yards. I mean, they were unstoppable. They were 4-for-4 on third downs. And here they get the ball end to half, looking to do more. And they march it 80 yards quickly down the field in under a minute. They get a PI call on Tyreek Hill in the end zone. And so they get to spot the ball basically on the 1 yard line. And there's 9 seconds left. They don't have any timeouts, but it's first and goal, and I think you obviously play your cards right. You can get a couple shots into the end zone before you kick the field goal. You have two plays. They run a little sprint out to the left on first and 10, and it's not really there. The Bengals have it covered, and Patrick does a smart thing and just kind of burns it into the ground and throws it away. And all of a sudden here, there's 5 seconds on the clock, and it's second and goal. And yeah, the Chiefs are going to run another play, and they definitely have enough time. And in a kind of a bizarre turn of events, they end up running a funky little play action fake run on second down, and Patrick kind of holds the ball, and he ends up flipping it out late to Tyreek Hill.
Mahomes throws. Hill catches at the 6 and gets tackled. Inbounds, and the clock runs out.
Eli.
And you're kind of thinking if he threw it out there, it must be a walk-in touchdown. And no, it's not. I mean, there's two Bengal defenders right there who, obviously come up and make a great tackle, keep Tyreek in bounds, and the clock ticks zero, and that's it. And it's, to juxtapose it with the situational football that the Chiefs played the week prior against the Bills when, they like masterfully, obviously, end a game scenario and clock management and doing everything perfect. And,
it was the
very next
Alex.
Week, it was an absolute, bit of a debacle. And it ended up costing them the game.
So the Bengals go into the half riding high because they had this 41-yard screen pass for a touchdown to Samaje Perine. They get that stop inexplicably, somehow, they get that stop on the Chiefs offense. And after halftime, this is what the Chiefs offense goes out and does, Alex. They go punt, punt, interception, punt, punt, and then that game-tying field goal we discussed. Obviously, the Bengals the defense, they made some amount of adjustments. What did you see in terms of how comprehensively they had flipped their entire identity after the half?
Yeah. I mean, I think you said it. To go back to the changing point of this game was the screen pass the Bengals hit on their final possession of the first half. They dumped the screen to Samaje Perine.
Burrow back to throw. Short pass caught by Perine. Perine down to the 30. Nice. Sideline, 25, 20, 15, 10, 5. Yeah. Touchdown! Nice. Bengals! Samaje Perine!
And then they hold the Chiefs to no points on the 1 yard line. Those two possessions completely changed this game going into halftime and really gave the Bengals a ton of fuel. And it showed coming into the second half. And yeah, I mean, it's funny. The changes they made into the second half weren't really these crazy. It's not like they, we went in blitzing them and now we're going to play a bunch of coverage and drop eight. No, they kind of in the first half were playing a lot of coverage as well. They weren't pressuring Patrick Mahomes. They were kind of daring him to march it down the field. Can they dink it and dunk it? Hope that, you know, our D-line can get home here or there and create a negative play and really stall out drives. And in the first half, they just couldn't get it done. Patrick Mahomes was scrambling all over. He had made plays with his feet. The first two touchdowns were both scramble touchdowns where he's like spinning around in the pocket and hitting Kelsey and Tyreek
like
in the back of the end zone.
Running around for like 30 yards.
Yeah. And you're kind of thinking like, God, they can't keep, they got to change it, right? You're like the Bengals, they got to stop doing this. Maybe we got to bring some pressure.
Something.
Yeah. You know, let's flip it. Well, I mean, what do they do in the second half? They dial up more, drop eight. And I think there was one small adjustment with it is that they started to spy Patrick Mahomes. And what I mean by spy is when you stop rushing them, so you a player drops out. The Bengals were only rushing three, so they got eight guys into coverage. But one of the linebacker type bodies that's really kind of in the linebacker box and in the box looking for crossing routes and underneath routes. Well, he also has the freedom to trigger on a delayed pressure and rush the passer. And the Bengals kind of went to this and ended up being it's the play that, you know, took it to overtime. They almost won it when they sacked Patrick on the final play of regulation and he fumbled. And it really worked for him the second half. Patrick and this Chiefs offense didn't have an answer for it. It really kind of threw him for a loop. And the numbers are staggering. I mean, Patrick went from playing nearly perfect to really, really struggling as a whole in the second half. No touchdowns, two interceptions in the second half and into overtime.
On the other side of things, I want to talk about Joe Burrow. I mean, Joe Burrow, like the legend of him, Alex, and what he's been accomplishing in his second season in this league. I mean, just for the young people out there, right? Like, this is one of the most historically awful franchises in all of sports, let alone just football. And here they are headed to the Super Bowl. What did watching Joe Burrow in this game tell you about him?
Oh, I think it only continued the legend of Joe Burrow. I mean, he did what had got him to this point. I think the beauty of it when I do watch him is there's no one thing. I mean, this guy isn't like a one trick pony. He can get you a lot of different ways. And we've talked about his toughness. We've talked about, you know, obviously his demeanor in the pocket. He you know, he's so tough to rattle. And the Chiefs couldn't get it going today either, right? I mean, you know, faced with an 18-point deficit, he didn't blink. He didn't blink, unfazed. You know, he's just a cool cat back there. And then I felt like in the second half, when this Chiefs defense, still playing with the lead at this point, was really trying to bring it home, you know, Chris Jones, Melvin Ingram. And there were three big plays in this second half that Joe Burrow made in the pocket. I mean, when he was under a ton of duress, and I don't know how he got out of these tackles and ran around.
I don't either.
And one of them in the third quarter was a huge play. He scrambles around. He breaks these tackles. He hits Jamar Chase for like a 22-yard gain. And then in the fourth quarter, when they're, you know, going down to tie this ball game and take the lead, he had two huge third down conversions with his legs.
Still didn't get him. Oh, my goodness. How did he get another chance? Reaches out. And he's going to have the first down.
There's no way. He's fully sacked. And this isn't just nobody. This is Chris Jones.
It's just kind of, he's got that about him, right? I mean, it just didn't surprise me. He's done it all year. Just seems inflappable. And then, again, for me to just go back to a year ago, to watch him make the plays with his legs. A year ago, this guy tore his ACL well into the season and, come back and record setting. I mean, you know, in 2 years to be the number one pick and take your team to the Super Bowl, obviously, I mean, it's been 30 plus years, I think, since they've been there. They haven't had this any kind of success, hadn't had a postseason victory in, you know, a long time. And to, I think, to inspire his team to really be at the core of what this team's buying in, I think we got to give him a ton of credit. I thought down the stretch that the Bengals' youth, Joe Burrow being a part of that, that they would blink, you know, that the stage would be too big. They've never been there before. Their coach has never been there before. They're all young. Everybody, you know, on that staff, on the team, like that it would just be too much for them at Arrowhead, you know, the loudest stadium in the world.
The Chiefs had done this 4 years in a row, yeah, AFC like, title
yeah,
game.
This is, you know, no sweat for the Chiefs. They've been there, done that. And I thought that would be the difference, to be honest. And boy, was I wrong, because in the fourth quarter, down the stretch, it was the complete opposite.
That's the surreal part, Alex, that like Patrick Mahomes could look that vulnerable, that panicked.
I feel like a little bit it was the tail of their season, right? You know, all year they'd been, this offense had been the talk of a lot of criticism, right? Couldn't get it going for a long time, and then finally found it. And here in the playoffs looked like they had really found it. And in one game managed to display all of that, you know, in a first
yes.
half where they looked absolutely electric and unstoppable. And in a second half looked like, absolutely pedestrian and couldn't even get out of their own way or figure out what the defenses were trying to do to them. And so, got to give a ton of credit to this Bengals team for buying in and believing in themselves, for coming together. I think the NFL right now is in such good hands. And when you think about it, I think Joe Burrow kind of embodying the core of the ton of really good young quarterbacks in this league that are going to be here for a long, long time. And I think that's really what has led to, you know, making this season so special and certainly these playoffs.
Well, at the end here, Alex, let's talk about the passing of the torch and who is passing that torch in specific. Because the thing about football, as you said, part of its greatness is chaos. And the man who has brought order to that chaos more than any human who's ever played the sport before over decades now is Tom Brady. And over the weekend, like on Saturday, just to briefly recap what happened, our Adam Schefter and our Jeff Darlington are reporting that Tom Brady is retiring. So convincing is this report that his receivers, Mike Evans, Chris Godwin, they tweet congratulations on a career. His own brand, the TB12 Twitter account, is tweeting congratulations. And then Tom Brady's dad and his agent and seemingly the Buccaneers are all saying, actually, he has not made a decision yet. Tweets are deleted, et cetera, et cetera. So this is an alleged retirement for the time being. But operating under the presumption that, in fact, this is the end for Tom Brady, I mean, this is a guy that you got to know a little bit, Alex. This is a guy you played against.
Yeah.
What do you think of, just in terms of your personal encounters and memories, what do you think of when you think of the fact that, wow, it's actually all over, allegedly?
Yeah. Okay, well, under that premise, Pablo, the hypothetical that Tom Brady
yes.
is may have
Indulge
retired,
us.
May have retired. I think flat out, Pablo, in any team sport in America, he's the greatest athlete that we've seen. I think flat out. I honestly do. He's greater than Michael Jordan.
Michael Jordan is so mad at you right
yeah,
now. But
I'm sorry,
continue.
Michael. But I just think it's the truth. And I think it's been so hard for us to digest while he's playing. Because it is. I mean, he's still playing. He just had a career year. And I think time will only reveal, like I do. I think he's the greatest athlete to ever play team sport in this country.
But was there a quality, Alex? Was there an aspect of him that you envied more than even the others? Yeah.
Well, I think one that he did it his own way, right? I mean, in a day and age where we love to compare people, you know, he plays like this or he's just like this guy. Like Tom just did it his own way. I mean, like I said, this guy's a late, barely got drafted. You know, everybody said his, you know, the tools weren't good enough, and he, you know, he did it his own way. And he was comfortable in that and had the confidence in himself from the get-go. The whole on to Cincinnati, Bill Belichick quote, I mean, we beat the brakes off of them. I mean, this was like 8 years
That's
ago
right.
and everybody, 8 years ago
You're,
and everybody thought his career was done, right? Jimmy Garoppolo
you're
came
what
in.
Came before Cincinnati.
Yeah.
That's right.
Jimmy Garoppolo came in the end of that game, and everybody talked about, was that the passing of the torch? I mean, that was like 8 years ago.
Oh, my Lord.
You know, and he just, he has defied so many naysayers. If you were a fan, you rooted for Tom and the Patriots, and if you were everybody else, you hated him. You know, and I think what's so remarkable about what Tom did, you know, with everything at the end of his career and obviously then going to Tampa Bay, is that it was so remarkable he defied all that. You couldn't be a hater anymore. Like, you just had to appreciate what he was doing. It's just tough to put into words and do him justice. And I do think it'll be special to hear, kind of get away from the game and to realize how special it was and how good we had it for so long with him playing. And he will be missed, obviously, a ton. And the NFL won't be the same. And I don't think we'll ever see the likes of a Tom Brady again.
But here's one thing you can't help him out with, Alex, because this is still, as much as it's felt like 100 years, it's just your first season in retirement.
Yeah.
So any advice for Tom as he finally makes his transition into civilian life?
Yeah, I can't believe it's a year ago that I was actually playing football. Like, I do feel like it's been,
I do feel like it's been
5 years. Yeah, I got nothing for Tom, Pablo. I mean, this guy's already slinging crypto and the TB12 method. I don't think he is going to have any problem post-career. I think he could do anything he wants to do, and it'll be interesting to see what that is.
So before Michael Jordan takes all of this extra personally and tries to, you know, become the best podcast host ever, Alex, I will simply say we are on to the Super Bowl, so I will see you in L.A., man.
I can't wait, Pablo. Thanks, man.
I'm Pablo Torre. This has been ESPN Daily. I'll talk to you tomorrow.